Welcome, everybody, to the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. For the record, it is February 21st, 2018. A couple of my members are not here. One of them has a prearranged meeting with the governor and will be here, I think, probably within the next 15, 20 minutes, but we'll see. We have three bills on the agenda. I have been asked to carry over House Bill 4048 till Monday. Unless there's an objection, is there anybody here who feels they need to testify on it today rather than waiting until Monday when we're seeing none? Okay. So we were going to carry that one over then. Then we have two left, and we'll start off with House Bill 4054, and we'll open a public hearing on that. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4054A authorizes the Department of Transportation to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Portland for the purposes of removing certain personal property from locations within the city's urban growth boundary. It specifies the requirements of posting notices, and it sunsets January 2nd, 2023. A fiscal impact statement has been issued. There's no revenue impact, and it came across the House on a vote of 58-0.
Welcome, Senator, Representative.
Thank you.
What do you Portlanders want now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Everything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rod Monroe, Senate District 24, which is mid-Multnomah County and northern Clackamas County. And we have a problem that's not unique to our district, but is certainly been exacerbated in our district, and that is we have a lot of people that are homeless and that are camping in various locales. One of the places that in our district that seems to be most troubled by this is the confluence of I-205 and the Springwater Trail and Johnson Creek. So Springwater Trail basically follows Johnson Creek all the way from Estacada clear to downtown Portland. And I was one of those that was responsible for, this used to be an old trolley line, for converting it to a bike ped trail. Very beloved by citizens around it, but misused sometimes by homeless people, and with the filth and some of the problems and needles and so on becoming a problem, making it so that many citizens that are contacting Representative Reardon and myself are afraid to use it, especially women, don't want their children using it. This is a commuter trail. It's a trail that people can use to commute all the way downtown, or use to commute to schools and so on, and it's very difficult to use it that way. The problem is that where I-205 crosses the Springwater Trail and Johnson Creek, you have a jurisdictional problem. There's much land that is, of course, run by ODOT, owned by, you know, ODOT, that's along either side of I-205. And then there's also land there that is under the jurisdiction of the City of Portland. The problem is today you have both jurisdictions sometimes being called upon to resettle or remove some of the folks that are camping along there. ODOT, when it removes campers, it just removes them and they go somewhere else. Sometimes they move across the street into City of Portland property, and that doesn't really solve the problem. What this measure does is it allows for an intergovernmental agreement between ODOT and the City of Portland. Both have concerns, both have property that's affected, both have concerns about these homeless people. But only the City of Portland really has the ability to provide them with services. So it's not just, you know, just sweeping them off means they just move to someplace else, kicking the can down the road. If the City of Portland acts and removes these people, they can provide them with other services. So try to find them a place to live. try to find them drug treatment programs, and basically keeping the neighborhood safe. Representative Reardon and I both hear from literally hundreds of our constituents that live in around this area, and that are disgusted, terrified, you name it, about the filth and the needles and other things, and they want this problem taken care of. So in working with both the City of Portland and ODOT, we've gotten both sides to agree that signing an intergovernmental agreement makes sense. So if there's an intergovernmental agreement, then it would allow for these people, when they are dealt with, to be offered the other services that they need. I think that's a win-win. It's a win for the neighborhoods, the people that live in that vicinity, but it's also a win for the homeless people, because it will enable them, hopefully, to receive some of the services that they need. So this bill passed out of the House unanimous, mm-hmm. We hope that it'll have the same treatment when it comes to the Senate.
Thank you, Senator. Did he leave you anything to talk about?
Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, good to see you this afternoon. For the record, I am Jeff Reardon, State Representative, District 48, which includes Southeast Portland, Clackamas, and Happy Valley. And no, the good senator, I think he was looking at my notes. I'm just checking to see if he left anything out. I think he was very complete. I'll just reiterate that right now the problem is huge. It's not good for the kids, the homeowners, the renters, and it's certainly not good for the homeless that are not well served by having two agencies. And it's not very cost effective when you have two governmental agencies providing similar services on different schedules. So I think for sake of everybody involved, it just makes sense to allow the city and ODOT to sit down and figure out the best way to really get put the city in charge of the cleanup and providing the services. So part of this, I want to make sure it's real clear to for this record that part of the requirement, it's actually in law right now, is that you have to call, if you're going to do a cleanup, you have to call a social agency and ensure that people are cared for. And I think that's important part of the message. I've heard this referred to as a sweep bill. It is not a sweep bill. It's get the area cleaned up in a way that's respectful, consistent, cost-effective, and so I don't want to ramble on. I just want to say why, make a little point about why this is important to my community, and I typically use the example of Lent Elementary School. So you have one of the ODOT trails right along 205. You have a field, you have a walkway down to Lent Elementary School, and we have elementary kids that are going to school. They are exposed to needles, human waste, other types of waste. It's just not it's not a great way for kids to start the day. So that's just one simple example of why this is so important to our community, that we address it in a way that's respectful and responsible. So I'll stop there if you have any questions.
It's nice to see you working together to share the territory. Questions of these two gentlemen?
And it's permissive. Remember, it's permissive. It doesn't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do.
All righty. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Elizabeth Edwards. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Edwards with the City of Portland. I think the senator and the representative did a nice job sort of laying out some of the high-level concerns that have led us to this point. I'm obviously here to urge your support for House Bill 4054. It's really a first step in creating a more consistent approach between the Department of Transportation and the City of Portland when it comes to managing property and coordinating services for people who are living outside. Both ODOT and the City of Portland have separate settlement agreements. ODOT's settlement agreement is codified in part in statute, which is why we're here talking about legislation. We amended the bill on the House side in order to add some more sideboards in. And specifically, I'll just quickly dot those. Before a campsite cleanup could occur, durable notice must be posted within 30 feet of personal property. There needs to be at least 48 hours notice, and that will be valid for a total of 10 days. Currently, the City of Portland's timeline on our own property is 24 hours to 7 days. For the Department of Transportation, it's 10 to 19 days. Or for properties that are posted as no trespassing, it's 24 hours. So in some circumstances, this is actually a doubling of the notice that's provided with the aim of achieving consistency. The posted notice would need to have the date when the notice was provided, as well as the date when personal property could be removed, along with information about how any removed property could be accessed and the length of time it would be appropriately stored. Any future IGA entered into would have certain protocols around severe weather, like what we've been having now, as well as impact reduction services, things like trash collection. You heard the senator and the representative reference some of the issues with specifically trash that develops. I also want to note that this bill contains exceptional emergency language that's mirrored in other parts of the state statute. Those are times when the city could immediately intervene. Instances where there's illegal activities other than camping, possible site contamination by hazardous materials, or immediate danger to human life and safety. The IGA would be available for public comment before it was finalized. And finally, as the committee administrator noted, there's a sunset on the bill. It's really an attempt to pilot some best practices and coordination between the city and the department. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks, and I'll note that we put some items on OLIS that were also available for the House committee, basically describing how the City of Portland approaches sort of a robust management and consideration of risks when dealing with our most vulnerable populations outside.
Good. Questions? Don't see any.
Thank you.
Matt, I see you in your back room. You're supportive of this?
Yes, sir.
Good enough. Is anybody else? That's all I have signed up for, House Bill 4054A. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this bill? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4054A. We'll open a work session on House Bill 4054A. Mr. Vice Chair.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4054A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thompson has moved House Bill 4054A to the House floor, Senate floor, excuse me. We got the right place.
Yeah.
Senate floor,
one
right?
Of the two.
That's where you want to move it to? Okay. Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that motion? Is there any dissent on that motion? Don't see any. House Bill 4054A. Hard time saying that.
5440 or
that's the one.
Yeah.
4054A is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. The Senator Monroe, would you carry?
Yes, of course.
You will. So we're closed on that. And we will then move on. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 4138. And is Representative Kennemer here? I don't see him. And neither is represented by him. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll catch them when they get here. So I will start off with Dave Honeycutt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4138 authorizes
he's also not here.
The State Marine Board to adopt rules at the request of the Department of State Lands relating to the operation of motorboats to minimize and prevent erosion. It takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment, sine die. There's a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and it came across the House floor on a vote of 35 to 20.
All righty, we'll move on down the list then. How about Matt, is it Radich?
Yeah.
And Don Fuchs? We'll start with two of you. Come on down. Oh, hold on just a second. The legislators have arrived. Come on down. We'll let you guys testify and get back to work. Welcome, representatives.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Kennemer, state representative from House District 39, parts of southern and eastern Clackamas County. And I thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. Just a couple of things about this bill is that I think this bill has been misunderstood because it is quite narrow and specific in its focus and simply addresses a gap between agency authority. Under current law, Department of State Lands, DSL, has rulemaking authority over the beds and banks of navigable rivers, which are owned by the state. DSL, however, has no authority over floating rivers. And under current law, the Oregon State...
Oh, it's me.
Mr. Chair, do you mind? Yes, thank you. And under current law, the Oregon State Marine Board, OSMB, has authority to adopt boating regulations, but has no authority to regulate shoreline erosion on the beds and banks of navigable rivers. Recently, questions have arisen on certain rivers, including the Willamette, over the impact of motorboats on shoreline erosion. DSL does not have statutory authority to regulate motorboats, and OSMB does not have statutory authority to regulate shoreline erosion. So if shoreline erosion is being caused by motorboats, there is no agency with authority to act. The purpose of House Bill 4138 is to give the OSMB the authority to adopt rules to address the impact on shorelines caused by motorboats. It fills the gap that currently exists between the two agencies. However, this bill does not expand DSL's authority. The bill does not presume that motorboats are causing erosion. The bill does not require DSL to do anything. The bill does not require the OSMB to do anything. What the bill does is allow DSL, if requested and if staffing and funding is available, to determine whether motorboat activities are partly responsible for shoreline erosion on certain navigable waterways. DSL can already undertake this analysis if they wish to do so. The bill does not require DSL to make this determination. If DSL chooses to undertake the study and if DSL determines that the motorboat activities are partly responsible for an increase in shoreline erosion, then DSL can ask the OSMB to consider rulemaking to address the problem. If asked by DSL to address the issue, OSMB can consider rulemaking to address shoreline erosion caused by motorboat activities. Oregon State Marine Board does not have to undertake rulemaking, and OSMB may determine that no rulemaking is necessary. This bill does not force OSMB to do anything. All it does is give OSMB the statutory authority to act if they so choose to do so. This still is nothing more than a gap filler to resolve a question of agency authority. And as a final note, and for the record, in the introduced bill, it was not my intention for line 26, sub 4, regarding a permitting system to be applied to any section other than 3 sub B on the Federal Scenic Wild and Scenic Waterways Program. When 3 sub C was inserted, the permit language was inadvertently separated into a sub 4. The Marine Board has indicated they don't need an amendment to administer their programs when this clarification is placed on the record. So, and thank you.
Thank you. Before you start, I just want to clarify. I think you said the bill does not require DSL to do anything.
That's right.
It allows them to do a study if they so choose.
Yes. Or if they're asked to and they can find the funding to do so.
Don't they have that authority already?
They do have that authority. Currently, they do not have the funding, Mr. Chair.
But this isn't a funding bill.
No.
So we're asking them, we want to give them the authority to do what they already have the authority to do?
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, let me see if I can clarify just a little bit.
Take a shot at it.
It's my understanding that DSL has been willing to assist the OMB in studying, for example, shoreline erosion, but felt like they had no statutory authority to do so, because it had to do with something other than natural causes, which is DSL's purview, and the Marine Board board is worried about something that results from boating. It seems like a very tortured interpretation of their authority to me, but this bill would clear that up and give DSL the absolute authority, should they be asked by the Marine Board to help out, to give them some erosion study work.
That strikes me as an odd and perhaps desired interpretation by an agency that doesn't want to do it.
Perhaps. If I might, Mr. Chair, just real quickly, this bill...
We need to get you put your...
Oh, thank you. Representative Rich Vile, House Bill 26, House District 26. And my district, by the way, runs from South Hillsboro all the way down to the Willamette River. So I've got this big stretch of the Willamette River in along Wilsonville and to the west a little bit. That's why I'm here. I had constituents come to me. There's clearly a bit of a problem out on the Willamette right now, conflicts between everything from the big wake boats to the kayakers to the fishermen. There's just a lot of conflict going on. And in an effort, perhaps a bit misguided, to try and manage that conflict, I came up with House Bill 4099, which we've since backed off to a study kind of a bill, and it's down in Ways and Means to see if we can get some money to do that. But this is the companion bill to that House Bill 4099, and what we found out as we were looking at this whole issue of excessive wakes and what they were doing to the banks was that the Marine Board said, well, we can't really talk about bank erosion because that's not something we have the authority to look at. That's DSL. And DSL says, well, we can't really talk to you about motorboat wakes because that's not something we have the authority to look at. So House Bill 4138 essentially says, guys, quit hiding behind a technicality, and if you need to, talk to one another as we try and sort this conflict issue out. It's pretty much that simple.
Okay.
Or it should be that simple.
Anything else?
No.
Any questions? Don't see none. We'll let you get back to work in your other committees.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. All right. Now we're back to Mr. Radich and Mr. Fuchs. Hopefully I didn't mispronounce your name.
I've been called first.
Uh-oh. So apparently I did. Welcome.
Okay. Chairman Beyer, members of the committee, my name is Matt Radich. I am the president of Active Water Sports. We are a boat dealer in Oregon. We sell towboats, and I'm here kind of speaking for all the towboat dealers in Oregon. You know, the boats we sell are you know, one they refer to of the in the I guess conflicted thoughts and ideas of what to do. And to be clear, we are not pro-erosion. you know, this when we talk about this. And it's important that we all have a clear understanding because we want to do everything we can to mitigate any conflict, and we're working with the Marine Board right now to do that. So while this bill seems well-intended, and when I listen to it, I'm like, yeah, that all makes sense. I think what it has is the potential to lead to some unforeseen negative consequences. So I don't want, you know, homeowners or environmental groups aggressively and unfairly targeting what we do and what we sell once they get this erosion under the belt. Because I don't, overarching, the conflicts aren't about erosion. They're about use. They're about the river's getting very crowded because we have more boaters. We have more people in the area. So I think that's at a bigger issue. And those are things that we need to look at more, educate boaters, work with the Marine Board. So points to consider in opposition of this bill, which we definitely are in opposition to this bill. The revenue and expenditure impacts are that there are no revenue impacts and minimal expenditure impacts, where from Jim Paul, the director of the Department of State Lands, he said, and to quote his testimony, the department does not currently have staff with the expertise necessary to determine the effects of erosion on state-owned submerged and submersible lands by boating activities. Thus, to exercise the option of making such requests, the department would likely need to find additional resources, sources, such as funding for a research study, to examine this issue on state-owned waterways. So, erosion involves many factors. Boat waves, boat wakes being one small part of it. On the river, the biggest one is just going to be the fluctuating river levels. It comes up very high in the winter. There's a lot of energy created by that water. So before there could be those requests made, there would have to be studies that really determined, yes, boat waves have a large impact that needs to be, somebody needs to look into. So those studies would need to be done. Those studies are definitely going to cost money. If applied incorrectly, probably this is our biggest concern and fear, is that it could lead to a prejudicial, I would say, and unneeded loss of waterway use to some boaters to a large segment of boaters. River users, waterfront homeowners, towboat dealers, we're all currently working with the Marine Board. I'm actually on a committee to mitigate wave-related conflicts. We're looking at no-wake zones around shorelines, docks, all those things, how to keep boaters away from those areas to bring down any conflicts. One big one from just solely a business standpoint for the towboat dealers, too, is any future regulation that did come out that limited towboat use, the boats that we sell with wake-enhancing devices, the things that people love to do on the water now behind the towboats, if those are banned from areas of the river, our sales are going to drop. We are going to lose jobs within the small business community of towboat dealers. So that's a real fear. And it might be small and it might be just for us, but it's certainly there. And that's, why we're here. Just passing that along. Like, these are things to think about when it comes to this. This isn't just a really simple, oh yeah, that makes sense, issue. So, the bill just leaves a lot of unanswered questions. Probably the biggest one is who's going to pay for it, because the intent certainly is going to be someone's going to want the Department of State Lands to make that request. There is intent behind this bill, certainly, So we're going to have costs for the state of Oregon and a potential loss of revenue for Oregon small businesses. It's not quite the easy answer that it seems, and I think just research, looking into it, education, letting the Marine Board do what they're working on now, if we could do that. So I would say, just as small businesses, river users, and definitely a group that cares about the waterways that we have, please consider the ill effects of this bill and oppose it. That would be my request. Thank you.
Well, if I understood Representative Vile right, there's a separate bill, different bill.
Yes.
That's down in Ways and Means asking for funding to do a study, which this seems a little bit cart before the horse.
Yeah, that one too. And, I'm happy to to really work with whoever it might be. I want to reduce conflicts. I certainly don't want to, unneeded erosion, because I want to be able to be in the business and the sport that I've for a long time. So okay. we're certainly
all
on
right.
that.
Sir?
Thank you, Chair Beyer, Senator Thompson, members of the committee. My name is Don Fuchs. I'm a homeowner. I live on the Upper Willamette River in Newburgh area, right across from Shampooey Park. I'm here in support of HB 4138. I'm not going to repeat a lot of what Representative Kennemer and Vile said. They took a lot of my thunder. Thank you. And so I'm going to focus on just a couple things I think are unique to my viewpoint and my experience as a homeowner and also a boater. I'm a wake boater as well. I have a wake boat with the enhanced wake devices that are being discussed in 4099 as well. So I have sort of focus on both sides of the equation. What I want to share with you, first is there's a lot of rhetoric on this bill. I think you have, members of the wake boat community that are stating that wake boats cause no erosion, and then you obviously have landowners that feel differently. And certainly I can share my experience and will in just a moment, but that's really not the point of this bill. I think the frustrating part of the gap right now is that there's really nobody, no regulatory agency within the state of Oregon that will tackle this. It's kind of a finger point. Go talk, you know, if you go to the Marine Board, go talk to DSL. If you go to DSL, talk to DEQ. Go talk to ODFW. And so there's nobody that's willing to even address this from a regulatory standpoint. And so that's frustrating from a homeowner's perspective. So on the other side of the equation, I do want to point out as a homeowner that there's a lot of regulation on what we're able to do along the river from the land side. So I had 2 years ago, I had a fairly large erosion event where I had a good size of my bank fell into the river. The foot had deteriorated, and then the bank fell in. So I never set out to become an expert on the permitting process along the river. Unfortunately, I have become so because in order to sleep at night, I had to figure out how do I fix this problem so I don't continue to have loss in that one small area. In order to get any remediation done, I have to go through the county, Yamhill County, in this particular instance, obtain a permit. I have to get a Willamette River or Willamette Greenway permit. And then in order to do anything that is near the or below the ordinary high water line, I have to go to Oregon Department of Lands and ODFW. And this is just to remediate something that I'm very concerned about as a homeowner. That's remediation. If I want to do anything preventative, that's pretty much impossible. For me to get permitting to throw riprap, I'm told that I have to plant willow trees along the river and you know, do the best I can. So I think part of the issue, I would disagree with Mr. Radich in that I think erosion is a very significant part of the equation for conflict. As a landowner, we're down there every day along the river. We enjoy the river, we're river users, and we see the impact that this activity has on our shorelines. And it's distressful. I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that we need to be able to tackle this effectively, and I think we need to have a comprehensive discussion if that requires DSL to find some money to do a study, then that's what we need to do in order to find the balance, because it's a real problem. It costs, my project was not that large, it cost me $100,000 to remediate. There's some that are much larger that I've heard, you know, are more like $250,000 and $300,000 issues. So for homeowners, this is a significant issue. We're not trying to prevent people from using the river. We live on the river because we love the river. We enjoy watching people enjoy the river. That's not the issue. But we do have to balance everybody's use. And not being for the Marine Board not to be able to consider erosion, I think, is limiting the ability for this discussion to happen effectively. The other comment I would make is that if wake boating activity does not cause erosion, then I'm a little confused why there's so much opposition to this particular bill. Thank you very much. I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve Grigg and Ken Verborst.
Chair, I'm going to pass everything I was going to say has been said, so thank you for the opportunity.
And you are?
Steve Gray.
Okay. Sir, come on up. Great.
Thank you for sharing your morning with us. My name's Ken Verbort. My wife and I bought a home on the river 31 years ago.
I know.
And I'm going to be real brief this morning. In the first 25 years, it's just a simple observation on my part, the first 25 years that we lived there, there was a lot of skiing, a lot of water activity on the river. And on any given weekend, especially during the summer, you could stand on my deck and look at the shoreline, and the shoreline would have, on a busy day, would have 5 feet of sediment washing off the shore. In other words, erosion taking place. And that would come out about 5 feet. And that was the skiers and pulling tubes and that kind of thing. And as the years went by, in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, the size of the boats have gotten larger. The size of the boats have gotten heavier, and they've come out with new ballast systems with the intention of making larger wakes. In the last 5 years, you can stand in my same place on my deck, watch the same stretch of river on a Sunday afternoon, or Saturday, Friday, and that muddy strip of river along the shore there, where the erosion is taking place, is now out 50 feet. We've got dirty water 50 feet off the shore, where during the first 25 years that my wife and I lived there, we had 5 feet. That's a huge difference in erosion. And the solution to this problem, I don't have. I can only tell you that we've got big wake on the water, and that wake comes against the shore. It runs 90 degrees to the shoreline, so it hits the shoreline straight on. And we have a real erosion problem. That's all I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Any questions? Thank you very much for coming. Let's see. Next I have on the list James Stanger and I think it's Randy Harris.
I'm Stanger. I'm going to pass to you.
You're going to pass too. And Glenn McCord?
Chair Beyer and Vice Chair Thomason, and I almost don't know what to say at this
Can
point.
Can I get you put your name on the record?
My name is Randy Harris.
Thank you.
And I live on the Willamette River in the area that's being affected as well. Really, kind of my opposition to this would be that it's already kind of what you I read it the same way that you stated, which is. The Department of State Lands already has the purview to address this in the event that they feel like there's a concern with some issue with erosion on the riverbank. I live quite literally four doors down from Mr. Verbort that was just here a moment ago. He's a wonderful neighbor. I'm thankful to have them as neighbors. But, you know, I also have a dock in the water and a boat. I don't have a boat with wake-enhancing devices, but my dock is 20 feet deep. It's 20 feet deep by 35 feet long, and the 35 feet runs parallel to the water, to the river edge. And I don't have silt coming out beyond. If my wife and son and I are down there swimming off the dock, we're not jumping into dirty water. So I can see where there is silt that gets agitated by boats going by for sure. But it's never on the outside edge of my dock, so I would say it's not 30 feet out. Having said that, I just feel like there's already a study being conducted in my primary with the Oregon State Marine Board. My concern was that if this were to go into legislation and we fund somebody else to do research, and the Oregon State Marine Board has already opened ruling to do research. What happens if they come to different, what if they arrive at different solutions or different results? And what happens there? Why would we want to pay for that, I guess, is really my question, when that already exists.
Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there anybody who can tell us about this study by the Marine Board?
Well, we do have some from the Marine Board, but let's finish the witnesses and then we'll ask.
Yeah.
You're okay. I want to finish the witnesses.
That's really all I had to say.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Sir.
Hi, my name is Glenn McCord. I'm also a landowner, live along the Willamette River in Wilsonville. I'm here to speak to you today, Chair Beyer and committee members, regarding House Bill 4138. what's interesting about House Bill 4138 and its, as self-admitted, sister bill, 4099, is that thousands of emails regarding these subjects have rolled in to legislative entities. Of those thousands, self-admittedly, by legislation, two-thirds of those are in opposition to these bills. So, and that's on record at the City of Wilsonville, where there was a hearing recently, City Council meeting, many people spoke on this. And again, two-thirds of the people were in opposition to these House bills. So I'm kind of wondering why these are still moving forward. I also wanted to point out, when confronted, you know, the chief's bill sponsor on this issue, 4138, when confronted by my wife, who spent about a half hour on the phone with the chief bill sponsor, and asked, what are the studies and what are the what supporting data do you have to write this bill and move forward with this bill? The answer was, and I quote, I have my own personal observations. And I have my own personal observations as well. We all do. That's why we're here. But they're subjective, and unfortunately, they're not always accurate. But I would like to refer to a study that was done. People are talking about, hey, study this, study that. Well, there was a study done. It was called Investigation of Motorboat-Induced Streambank Erosion on the Lower Deschutes River. Now, given it's not the Willamette, it's the Deschutes. Okay, this was done for the Marine Board by Oregon State University in 1990. Okay, boats existed in 1990. They were running up and down the Deschutes. That the results of that study state that, I want to find my exact information here. One moment, please. It says here, quote, furthermore, bank erosion occurs in many places where motorboats are not cause for erosion. Hence, motorboats should not generally be blamed for erosion problems. In fact, what I found interesting, if you look deeper into the statistics, within 3% of motorboat erosion were grazing animals. Okay, so it obviously is a very small issue. This is something that has been studied. And the chief sponsors of this were the Oregon State Marine Board at that time, as well as the Department of Parks and Recreation. So as I look back upon this, I'm confused when, like you had said, Senator Beyer, why are we putting into legislation something where two entities can already talk? There's already some data out there that supports the fact that motorboats are, at best, a very small factor in erosion. And why would we be moving forward and spending taxpayer dollars on something like this?
I would say, sir, that I'd be careful comparing a study on the Deschutes and the study on the lower Willamette, because the types of boats and the uses are considerably different. But I appreciate your comment.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions of this group? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
See, the only other person I have signed up, and then we'll get to the Marine Board, is Dave Honeycutt. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, here in support of House Bill 4138. Now, Mr. Chair, you asked the question about the cart before the horse, and I think that's a good question to ask. The problem that we have right now, and what this is a very narrow bill. What this bill is trying to address is not DSL jurisdiction. This bill doesn't change DSL jurisdiction at all. It only applies to state-owned waterways. It really potentially changes the Marine Board's jurisdiction, because the issue that we have now is that the Marine Board doesn't have jurisdiction over shoreline erosion issues. They certainly have jurisdiction over motorboats, while DSL has jurisdiction over shoreline issues on state-owned waterways. The state owns up to the high water mark of the beds and the banks on all navigable rivers. But the Marine Board doesn't have jurisdiction over erosion issues. And so what you get right now is you have DSL saying, well, we could look at erosion. We don't have the money, and it's going to be up to us in 19 to try and find some funding for DSL to do a study on shoreline erosion and its causes. DSL will say we can study the shoreline erosion, but we can't regulate motorboat activity. That's the Marine Board's jurisdiction. The Marine Board will say, we can regulate motorboat activity, but we can't regulate motorboat activity. We can't determine whether or not motorboat activity is causing erosion. That's DSL's jurisdiction. So you have the proverbial interagency finger pointing, saying we can't resolve the issue. So the problem that we have with the work group, whether it's the work group from 4099 or the Marine Board's work group, no matter what what the work group comes up with if there's a study. And for the record, I'm not here to tell you that motorboats cause erosion or not. I don't know. The fact is, we just don't know. That's the whole point of getting somebody to do getting DSL to do the study. But the problem is, if we get the Marine Board to say, look, DSL has done this study on this stretch of the Willamette, and they've determined that motorboats play a part. They certainly don't play at all. If you own land by the river, you can expect that you're going to lose some land. You're either going to lose some land or gain some land, depending on how the river channel moves. But if DSL determines that they play a part, then the Marine Board doesn't have jurisdiction at this point to do anything about it. That's the whole point of this bill, to make it clear that if somebody asks DSL to do the study and DSL decides to do it, the bill doesn't require them to do it, but if they decide to do it, and then if they do the study and they determine that motorboats don't cause erosion, then the whole thing's over. If they determine that motorboats play a factor in erosion, then the bill gives them the authority. It doesn't require them. It gives them the authority to go to the Marine Board and say, hey, we've done this study. We think that motorboats are causing some of the erosion on state-owned waterways. Marine Board then can decide. The bill doesn't mandate them to do anything either, which is why the bill doesn't have a fiscal. The Marine Board can decide then to go through their rulemaking process, have all the public hearings, have the same basic debate that you've had today in front of the Marine Board. Does it cause erosion or doesn't it? The Marine Board can decide that, and with this bill, then they have rulemaking authority to actually do something about it if they choose to do so. And so the bill really is, it's permissive, but it's not that it gives DSL additional authority, because it doesn't. It potentially gives the Marine Board authority if there's a determination that motor boating activity is causing erosion on state-owned waterways. That's all the bill does.
Thank you. Do you have a question?
I just have a question for Mr. Honeycutt. The wording in the bill is a little vague. And I just wanted to, if you could put it on record that says something to the effect that this doesn't give DSL or the Marine Board any greater authority over navigable waters or upland or private property.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, that's correct. The bill doesn't give DSL any new or different authority than they already have. It would potentially give the Marine Board they have the authority to regulate motorboat activity now. They don't have the authority to regulate motorboat activity if the need for the regulation is the result of erosion. So that's the only thing that this bill changes. It really is small and technical, and I apologize for being here late, Mr. Chair. I had a
You're
testimony
fine.
In another room.
We're here for another 10, 20 minutes.
Well, believe me, I won't go that long. Right? But my point is that I know that this bill has been tied with House Bill 4099, which is a very controversial bill. But this bill really is a small technical resolution of agency authority, and that's all it does. It doesn't presume that motorboats are causing erosion. It just gives an agency the ability to do something about it if the study is done and it's determined that it does.
Okay. So, Senator.
So the way I look at, the way I'm reading this, this gives C, 3C, gives the Department of State Lands and the Marine Board the same ability as 3A gives between the Marine Board and Fish and Wildlife.
Mr. Chair, Senator Riley, yeah, that's correct. What the addition to the bill does is it gives the Marine Board, it's a Marine Board statute that we're amending, it gives the Marine Board rulemaking authority to address erosion issues caused by motorboats, not caused by anything else, only caused by motorboats if they're requested to do so by DSL.
Just as Section A gives the Marine Board the authority to do rulemaking at the request of the State Fish and Wildlife Commission if there if there's a problem with wildlife or fish.
Mr. Chair, Senator Riley, correct. Caused by motorboats. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
Anything else?
Anything?
No. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
That's all I had signed up to testify. Let me see. There's a lot of people here. Does anybody else want to speak to this issue? Going once? Come on down.
Yeah, we're here.
Good afternoon, Senator Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson. My name is Suzanne Brown. I live on the Willamette River. I happen to live in Senator Girard's district. The reason that I think that I am highly in support of this is I was at a Marine Board hearing when an issue came up, and one of the very specific comments made by the Marine Board was that they could not consider the effect of wakes on the shoreline in their rulemaking. So they felt hampered by this ability. This bill would simply allow them the ability to move in that direction should they feel like they need it. It's clear that they feel like they don't have the ability to even consider the impact of waves on the shore when they're making those rules. That's why I'm in support of this bill. And if there are no problems with wakes, then there's no issue. End of comment.
Thank you very much. Come on down.
My name's Darren Halsey. I am a Willamette Riverfront homeowner as well. And my concern with the bill is that, let's say that there is a study, there is some determination that wakes have some contributing factor, which, I mean, I think everybody probably believes that waves hitting the shoreline have some effect on erosion, but, you know, to the degree that might be, having the Marine Board have the authority to ban boats is all they can do. Maybe that's not the best solution. Maybe riprap's the best solution. Giving the authority to state lands to dictate something to the Marine Board doesn't address the problem of the homeowners. Taking that ability to away from a homeowner, as was mentioned in the second person's testimony, has handcuffed us to the only option now is, okay, you got to go after the boaters then. And which boaters are you going to pick on? Everybody causes waves.
Yeah.
So if you determine waves are going to go after it, well, then you got to shut down everybody,
yeah,
except for the non-motorized boats. That's my problem with the bill. So I'm a no.
I understand what you're saying. Having dealt with not the boats, but just the erosion issues on the lower, I guess it would be the upper Willamette in my district, we've dealt with that a lot in different situations. And I guess I would say good luck trying to get the Corps, yeah, of Engineers to allow you to do any riprapping.
Yeah.
Anyone? Come on down.
Good morning, Senator Beyer, members of the council. My name is Rick Schulte. I am also a property owner on the Upper Willamette River in Wilsonville area. I've been using the river as most people do, and raising my family there. I've already sent some written testimony, and I encourage you to look that over, and hopefully you'll find that useful. My main objection to this bill is really kind of back to your point, is these agencies, and there's many of them. We've got Division of State Lands, Wildlife, Oregon State Marine Board, Clackamas counties, the bureaucracy around this erosion is tremendous. Creating additional laws or rules to govern this, I believe, is not necessary. I don't think it'll have any impact. I think the testimony that Mr. Warren from the Oregon State Marine Board, who took no position on these bills, if they feel that they are handcuffed or don't have the ability to do their rulemaking, I would assume that they would have said so. But when I read his testimony, he took no position on it. So they're in the process of rulemaking right now. I highly suggest that we let them do their job. That's what they're there for. They're fully funded by us boaters, paying our registration fees, and not by taxpayers, which I'm also one of those as well. So again, just for that, I would strongly encourage you to let this bill go and let the Marine Board do their work.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you very much. Anybody else? Well, come on down.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, committee members, my name is Stan Halley. I am a Willamette River homeowner and boater. We've been hearing a lot about, well, we should let the Marine Board do this and do that. This is a very simple clarification to fill a policy gap and responsibility. Another point is the study that was referenced in 1990 by OSU is totally irrelevant today. The boats then were probably around 2,000 pounds of displacement or weight. Today, back then, I should say, and the boats today are closer to 8,000 or 9,000 pounds. They plow through the water, creating the biggest wave possible. The law of the conservation of energy says that those waves that are tangential forces on the shoreline do not lose their energy until they hit an object or a shallow area of the river. The impact on the shoreline varies by soil condition, by the bend in the river, et cetera. So there's a lot of these elements that need to be looked at. And all we're doing here in House Bill 4138 is allowing the parties that the agencies that need to do this do their job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? None. Thank you. Last call. Anybody else? All right. Now, Marine Board. And I know it's DSL here as well. Well, the first question was, there was a reference at a study that the Marine Board did before. I think Senator Riley asked that question.
Yes.
Could you tell us about, was there one? And
Sure. Chair Beyer, Vice Chair Thompson, members of the committee, I'm Rachel Graham, Policy Environmental Manager for the State Marine Board. To clarify, what Mr. Harris was referring to is that we have an open rulemaking process going on now. Our board approved opening rulemaking in January for the purpose of drafting statewide rules for wake sports. Excuse me. So the rulemaking we're looking at now is to come up with a rule that would apply to all water bodies in the state. And as a starting point, we're looking at prohibiting certain wake sports, perhaps wake surfing and wake boarding, within 200 feet of the shoreline or docks, boat launches, other structures. And the reason we're doing this rulemaking is for the purpose of safety and reducing boater conflict. And so those authorities come from ORS 83175 and ORS 195, which give us those authorities to reduce conflict, protect traditional boat uses, and look at the congestion of a waterway. And I should just add that this rulemaking, we're hoping to have draft language this summer. So we've had one meeting with our advisory committee, and actually three people in the room here are on the advisory committee. And this summer, hope to have draft language out for public comment, and look to adopt statewide rules in October, possibly going into effect of January of next year.
It sounds like you have some authority, but it seems like I'm recalling this is not an area that I have a lot of knowledge in, but I know the Marine Board limits speeds and things like that.
Yes.
In terms of if they destroy docks or would put a danger?
Chair Beyer, our authorities do talk about consideration of the size of a body of water and traffic conditions, that we can make special regulations consistent with the safety and property rights of the public.
Property,
and that's where we can reduce speeds
sounds like you
or prohibit motor boats.
Sounds like you have quite a bit of authority.
Yes. I would agree when it comes to the safety of people on docks or looking at property damage, boats bumping into docks. You know, we've made those arguments as a reason to have, for example, we already have a statewide rule
that all boats must go slow, no wake speed within 200 feet of public boat ramps. And that is for that the whole idea that, you know, we're protecting people's property and their safety when they're launching and retrieving boats.
Okay. And DSL, this is, you got the water, you got the banks of the streams up to mid, what is it, the average mid-level?
Mean annual high water mark,
annual
Chair
high
Beyer,
water.
Yes.
Yeah. Got to get the right terminology.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, I'm DSL's director, Jim Paul, and I did submit, there is some testimony submitted that you should have in front of you. I think be happy to answer any questions the committee has. The one thing I might just take a moment to address is the topic of the DSL's existing authority. There were some comments and questions about existing DSL authority and the fact that this bill would not affect that authority. So I thought it'd be helpful just to take a minute or two to clarify what that authority is and how that, what the nexus would be were this bill to pass and DSL were to choose to act on the language in the bill. The DSL's authority here comes from the State Land Board's authority. The State Land Board is made up of the governor, the treasurer, the secretary of state, and has been in effect since statehood through the Constitution. The authority here is around state-owned waterways, which the waterways that were granted to the states at statehood under the Equal Footing Doctrine. And that ownership is to the mean average annual high water line and below. The authority over those waterways comes down to protecting the public trust values. So at the end of the day, we are charged on behalf of the land board with ensuring that those public trust values are protected. And those values encompass commerce, navigation, fisheries, and recreation. So in terms of the effect of this bill, which I want to be clear, as it says in my testimony, that a Department of State Lands does not have a position on, but in terms of articulating what would come of this bill, if the department were to choose to do a study to look at erosion, it would really be a two-step process. The first piece would be around one, studying if in fact erosion is connected, how much degree it's connected to this activities. But in order to link it back to DSL's authorities, you've got to connect that back to the public trust values. So first, is it happening and being caused some degree or in large degree, whichever the study looks at? But two, the next question is, to the degree we find that it's happening, do we believe that it is impacting any of those public trust values? If we were to find or inconclusive or conclusively know it is not impacting, there would not be an authority nexus for DSL to choose to request the Marine Board to act, because they would not have found any nexus to the public trust values that the department would have to is charged with protecting. So I want to be sure that's clear here. It isn't just about DSL having to find if there's erosion, but it should, in my view, it would need to be linked back to the public trust values. Further, which is also in my testimony, if in fact there is the potential for any request of the Marine Board to act on that, if there is the potential to limit public uses of the waterways, it would most likely require State Land Board approval to the department to make that request. So we would bring an agenda item in front of the State Land Board with a recommendation, and they would need to weigh in, and the public process that goes along with that.
I guess I would say, though, and you're both dealing in the public trust here, and the reality is, you know, from the agency side, we're always looking at this agency, that agency, whatever, to the people in the back there. We're all the state, and they would like to see us work together. And my assumption is if you did a study, you'd probably do it in cooperation with Marine Board and probably ODNF, Oregon Fish and Wildlife as well. Shouldn't use acronyms. So, I mean, it's just in the public's interest that would make sense. And my assumption at the end of the day is if the legislature decided to fund and you found out that there was indeed some damage, even though maybe it didn't meet yours, that the Marine Board would probably act on that. It's just common sense. So
Chair Beyer, fair enough. And I actually did, if I could, for one more minute, I did want to comment on the question around the studies or the resources that might need to be required for the DSL to act. I would say, in that same spirit, Chair, that you just voiced around sister agencies working together to solve problems for the public, our first step would not be necessarily, I believe, to go ask for funds and resources, but we would look to our sister agencies and see what resources they have and see if we could work together with existing resources to address the issue. And only if not, we would come to the, if we had to come to the conclusion for new resources, then we would go there. But
you probably don't have, I assume you probably, I know DSL is a pretty small agency. I assume you don't have the resources on staff to do that.
Chair Beyer, that is correct. We currently do not have those resources.
Sounds like the last time it was contracted to Oregon State University to do it.
Chair Beyer, that's correct. The engineering department of OSU did the study in 1989 for the Lower Deschutes.
Okay. Did I miss something? I thought there was one done on the Willamette before, the upper Willamette, our lower Willamette.
Chair Beyer, we have never paid for any study on the Willamette River.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood. Senator Riley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A few questions, if I may.
How about it?
So, first for DSL, the land, the value that you're looking at, the public value of the public land, which really only goes to, as you point out, the median between the of the annual high watermark. The erosion occurring above that, you have no jurisdiction over whatever. Is that correct?
That is correct. We don't have any jurisdiction over lands outside of the state ownership.
Right. So anything that you'd be looking at would be within the current medium between those two points. In other words, you're not concerned about where it's going to be next year. You're concerned about where it is now and if what's happening affects the value to the state. So in other words, if there's erosion and some land falls into the river, that increases the state lands. Is that correct?
Chair Riley, or excuse me, Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, the boundary of state ownership is the average annual high watermark, which can move over time if it's through natural accretion.
Right.
Then the boundaries of the ownership does move. If a river naturally widens, the ownership of the state naturally widens.
Right. Yeah. So, and for the Marine Board, in your rulemaking for these wake sports, are you considering the effect on game fish?
Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, no. Our authorities are very clear that we only make rules for the protection of fish and wildlife at the request of the Fish and Wildlife Commission.
Yeah, that was what I was getting to. So if fish and wildlife ask you to use those consideration in your looking at wake sports, then you would, or
yes.
You could.
Yes, we would. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Commission, has requested rules regarding boats in the past, and we have adopted several rules around the state specifically for the protection of fish and other wildlife species.
And that's because of Section A of this paragraph 3, line 21 in this bill.
Yeah, Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, that's correct.
So without line C being added, you can never take into consideration any erosion, no matter who asks you about it.
Well, I need a property damage.
Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, it's not clear. I would just say the word erosion is nowhere in our statutes.
So the gentleman who had a chunk of his land falling off, you can't determine if that's because of motorboats or anything like that.
So Chair Beyer, Senator Riley, yeah, like DSL, we have no staff that can make that determination.
Right.
You know, we see erosion as a natural process.
Okay.
With many factors.
but I think I would
based on what you said, your general powers, I don't have in front, one of the issues was protection of property. I would think that probably is a very broad general thing, but you probably have the authority without that specific. Okay.
I'm through.
Anybody else? Thank you very much. Well, thank you all for bringing this to us. It's obviously a very complicated question that we need to think about a little bit. So I think for today we will close the public hearing. And I would just note again that we have carried over, specifically carried over 4040A regarding the licensing. Just for those who might be here to deal with that.
And wish to carry over 4130?
Nope. Okay. And with that, gentlemen, we're adjourned.